Do you want us to limit our presentations to 15 minutes?
That was the original idea.
Okay. Works for me?
Huh?
That works for me? You've already got him. Oops. Oh, let's see. Back up. Okay. My name is Julie Darnell. Does the mic seem to be working? It's probably not even necessary. Okay. And I'm currently an assistant professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago, but the work that I'll be presenting today, I conducted as a doctoral student at the University of Chicago. This is the question that I am answering today: what factors explain why the number of free clinics varies across urban communities? But first, I want to define free clinics so that you know what I'm talking about, and then make a case about why you should care about them. When I define free clinics, I'm talking about private nonprofit organizations that are targeting care to the uninsured. They're staffed mostly by volunteers, volunteer health professionals. They deliver a variety of services, mostly medical, but medical often in combination with other kinds of services. They're located in a variety of different kinds of settings. It might be a permanent space or a bowered basement. And what uniquely about them, they either charge no fee or what they charge would be considered very nominal. So why should we care about them? Well, they've been part of our healthcare landscape for actually more than 40 years, and they provide an appreciably greater, they're appreciably a more important member of the ambulatory care safety net than I think generally recognized. In a parallel study that I conducted along with this study as part of my dissertation, I did a national survey of all known free clinics. And as part of that effort, I was able to estimate that there were about 1,000 free clinics around the country. And together, they served approximately 2 million uninsured patients and altogether collectively provide about 3.2 million medical visits annually. At the same time, we see alternate sources of ambulatory care declining. We see this in the private physician charity care market, and public health departments are providing less and less primary care these days. At the same time, we've seen a general increase in the recognition of and formalization of free clinics. There's now a National Association of Free Clinics. They have lobbied successfully to receive malpractice coverage through the FTCA. Many free clinics receive state appropriations. And in today's environment with our poor economy, who knows what will happen about universal coverage. So here's a map showing the number of free clinics by metropolitan statistical area. And metropolitan statistical areas are areas that have at least a population of 50,000. And the legend's a little complicated to dissect. It's in a scientific notation, and basically what it means is those that are shaded white have no free clinics. The ones that the lightest shade blue have one. The next darker shade is two. The next darker shade is three. And the very darkest blue has at least four, as many as 32 free clinics. The Chicago, Gary, and there's a area in Wisconsin, that MSA actually has the greatest number of free clinics in the country. So my question came from understanding that the number of free clinics was distributed unevenly across these MSAs, and I wanted to understand why. So I, as a first start, wanted to look at two dimensions of this issue, looking at unmet need as understood by demand by those who need this kind of care, the uninsured and the poor, and looking at availability of resources. So looking at what's on the ground, what are the other providers that are there serving poor and uninsured populations. So I developed a conceptual model of unmet need and looking at the people, the demographic characteristics, so looking at the population and then looking at the resources, both in terms of the financing, as you'll see through Medicaid policy, and then the delivery of care in a variety of different kind of ambulatory care actors, and wanted to understand how those are influencing the number of free clinics or that variation that we see in that map. Underlying this conceptual model, I was examining a few different theories. I used theories from the nonprofit sector to try to understand free clinics, since free clinics are a special type of nonprofit organization. And just very briefly, I'll talk about one of the theories that I looked at called government failure theory. And in a nutshell, that theory would suggest that there's a negative relationship between government, the size of government, and the size of the nonprofit sector. So the more government you would have, this theory would predict you'd have a smaller nonprofit sector. So extending that to free clinics, I would hypothesize that there would be fewer free clinics where there's a more publicly supported ambulatory care market. So the methods that I used for this study were to combine the data that I used in identifying all known free clinics across the country. So my dependent variable is simply a count of free clinics. And then I used data from secondary sources to characterize these MSAs, both the population inhabitants and what was on the ground in terms of healthcare market. As I mentioned, I was looking at the number of free clinics, so I looked to count models, and because there was evidence of overdispersion, meaning that the variance exceeded the mean, I looked to negative binomial families. I use a cross-sectional design. Most of my secondary data comes from the period of about 2005, and that's 2005-2006 is when I conducted my national survey of all free clinics. And I do have in my unit of analysis all 361 MSAs. So now I get to results. About 80% of all free clinics are located in an MSA, so 799 of the free clinics are distributed across in a geographic unit of MSAs. But as you'll see, fully a third of free MSAs have no free clinics, and another third have one, and then 10% have two, and so on and so forth. So the median is just one. So it's pretty rare occurrence, so that really also bolsters using the count models. So now I'd like to turn your attention to the handout. I made these available if you didn't get it from me directly before the visit. It's on the chair on the left-hand side, the first chair. And first, I just want to walk through the coefficients so that you can understand what I've displayed in the two models. So I have two primary models. I have my full model, which is looking at all MSAs, all 361 MSAs, with all my variables. And then there was one variable, I wanted to look at private physician charity care, but I didn't have that variable for all MSAs. So in that situation, I only have 280. So I call that my restricted model, the model with the physician charity care variable. I have reported my coefficients as incident rate ratios. And the way to interpret these is that if you see a value that's greater than one, then that's suggesting a positive association with the dependent variable. If you see it below one, it's a negative association. So let's take the first row in the first column, looking at the percent uninsured. You have an incident rate ratio of 0.92. What you would say to interpret that is a 1% increase in the percent of uninsured is associated with an 8% decrease in the number of free clinics, holding all else constant. So that was unexpected, and I'll get to maybe exploring the reasons why. And then want to look at an example that has greater than one. We can look at the Medicaid fee index. So if we look at the Medicaid fee index, which is under the government failure gap filler Medicaid, it's the 2.028 coefficient. So every unit increase in the Medicaid fee index is the expected number of free clinics would increase by 103%. That's how you would interpret that. But now I just want to talk about the findings and move away from the coefficients for a minute. I did find evidence in support of the argument that free clinics are gap fillers. This would be consistent with this government failure theory, greater government, less nonprofit. And I found this to be true for the free clinics example, so that I do find that free clinics fill in gaps both in the financing and delivery of care for the poor and uninsured, although I have slightly less robust findings for the financing piece because one of the two findings that was consistent is only statistically significant at 0.10. But I have stronger support on the delivery side with the most important provider organizations that are there to serve the uninsured and the poor, FQHCs and FQHC lookalikes, so that an increase in FQHCs per 10,000 uninsured is associated with a 28% decrease in the number of free clinics, and it's a little larger for FQHC lookalikes. This was an interesting result. If you recall, when I was explaining the coefficients for the Medicaid provider payment, the 2.028, I'm trying to explain this on this slide. I found that there was a positive association, and the way that I stepped back to interpret this was, I'll suggest, I gave it the office kind of phenomenon. So you have a physician who's caring for a combination of Medicaid and private pays, and if they feel that their Medicaid reimbursement is not very adequate, they consider their Medicaid patients their charity. So they're giving at the office. And so they would then be less inclined to want to go out, start a free clinic, or go down the street and volunteer at a free clinic. It was puzzling to me to find no support for this sort of social need, looking at uninsured, sort of this sort of direct demand from the uninsured, from the poor, and from percentage African American, because in the case of uninsured and African American, both of those turned out to be statistically significant in the direction that's opposite that that's hypothesized. And I played around a lot with it. Even if I would just have uninsured in the model, I still found a negative coefficient. So one, stepping back, I thought, well, maybe one explanation for it is that if you're going to set up a free clinic, it's easier to see that there's an absence of providers to serve the uninsured, but it might be harder to know that the high demand exists by uninsured or the poor or minority. I'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute, too. So this study is the first known effort to look empirically at the role free clinics play in the ambulatory safety net. I looked only at demand and would say that demand doesn't fully account for that variation. So that unmet need is necessary, but it's certainly not sufficient. So like all good dissertations, this raises new questions and new variables to put in future models where I'd want to look at supply side factors. Pardon me. As I mentioned, I did find support that's consistent with the notion that free clinics are gap fillers, as government failure theory would predict. But when I included the physician charity care variable, I find that private free clinics are not a substitute for private physician charity care. The results from this study might suggest if a state wants to encourage more charity care, one way of doing it would be to increase their Medicaid provider or reimbursement rates. But I have to be very cautious about this finding, because this was not something that is consistent with the theories that I examined in my dissertation. Though I would say that my interpretation is consistent with other literatures that have tried to explain the amounts of private physician charity care. And those studies suggest that it is influenced by the degree of their financial pressures. Again, there's research is needed to confirm this finding on physician volunteers. You know, what is their Medicaid volume? How much of their revenues is from Medicaid? What are their reasons for volunteering? So lots of things to study. I mentioned that I didn't find support for this issue that high need, either by any measure that I used, was associated with more free clinics. And I must admit that this could be a function simply of omitted variable bias, since I'm only looking at one side of the equation, focusing on demand. If these results are associated with level of resources, number of churches, the amount of philanthropic dollars, I could be in trouble here, and this could be a result of omitted variable bias. So the study has important limitations. I am focused on demand side factors. I started there because that's where the theories were the most robust. My dependent variables account. What I'd like to do next is actually try to adjust and have a better measure of capacity, and maybe I'll have some different findings if I'm able to adjust for patient visits. The data are cross-sectional, and with cross-sectional data, of course, there are concerns. In my case, I'm concerned about, I'm only looking at free clinic survivors, which could be very different from those who came into existence and died off. And because I'm using cross-sectional data, I had to make some assumptions about the population characteristics. And even the free clinic might have been formed 10 years ago or 20 years ago, although most free clinics that exist today have been formed since 1990, so they're fairly new organizations. Still, there is a difference that could be influencing my results. I gratefully acknowledge all the funding support that I received to carry out this research, and thank gratefully my dissertation committee at the University of Chicago. Any questions? Oh, thanks. Good question. I did find a positive association with the number of medical students. So there is the supply side factors that I only used as controls in this study because I wanted to save it to study later a little more consciously. But yes, absolutely. When I look at the population of free clinics, though, medical student-run free clinics are a very, very tiny minority of the population of free clinics. There were about maybe 50 medical student-run free clinics out of 1,000. So they're a tiny portion. But having them there and it's a lot more than just the medical students. It's those who are affiliated in an academic medical center environment that might be stimulating free clinic growth. So yes, I want to look more at that. Exactly, right. Yep. No, I think they are shown to be significantly positively associated with the number of free clinics. Yeah.
Give me those numbers again. Medical Student Associated Committee, free clinics were...
As I remember, it's maybe about 50 or 60 out of about 1,000. I did a complementary study of the universe of free clinics, and one of the variables I asked, is this free clinic medical student run, and out of I had a 76% response rate, and out of those that responded, so I had 764, about 50 or 60 had indicated that they were for free clinics, so I guess about 10%.
Right, because that clearly would be one explanation for not being associated with need.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of action on the supply side. Yeah, I was going to say, in New York, it's interesting. It's mostly student-run. And Chicago is the same. We have a lot of medical student-run free clinics in Chicago and very few freestanding permanent free clinics. But in other places, there's not much student activity. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Let me give you an example, because this is as far away from a New York City MSA as you could possibly think, and that would be the Bell County MSA. That's Fort Hood, Darnell. You have medical students from Texas A&M College of Medicine. You have three free clinics in an MSA that had like 200,000 people. two of them were, I mean, they were physician-run. And then the medical student came around and opened a free clinic of their own within the homeless, within one of the homeless shelters. And so the reason I asked my initial question was, we have a lot of the clinical faculty, you know, who would provide their time in a free clinic effort and enterprise, because most of their day job, you know, the clinical work they did by day, was part of their revenue generation to keep things up and going and running.
I just wanted to make one other comment that I would have to move on. So the free clinics that were developed in D.C., largely when they closed D.C. General, all those free clinics largely became major providers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things like that that happened. Secondly, the HMO penetration of markets for physicians is sort of akin to the Medicaid payments. So that if people are taking a lot of HMO, during the period of time you're doing it, especially in the local floor, HMO penetration